And normally we would have beginning music, but evidently we don't. So here we go. I didn't think we were going to have beginning music. And then it just came. It came from the cloud, Shannon. You've heard of this thing. The cloud. It came from the cloud. Yeah, voila. I don't think no one knows how the cloud works, and neither do I. So Shannon, I'm sorry, I was on mute. You didn't hear all the eloquent things that I said. So not a word. Not a word. Yeah, crickets. Well, my mute button is very sensitive, evidently. If I just get near it, it mutes me, which, you know, there's probably some things there that we could talk about. But while we do this,
while
we start
a level of sensitive.
Yeah, it is a different level of sensitive. While we introduce yourself to the audience, do us a favor and tell us a little bit about you.
So, Shannon Kirk, I am at California Pizza Kitchen. I've been here, almost 12 years now, so it's been quite a long journey, an exciting one. I am their VP of People, Organizational Design, and Infrastructure, which boils down to I work with all the infrastructure teams, so our payroll, our benefits, our HRIS, really looking at what we're trying to do as a company, what we're trying to achieve, where we want to go, and then how we build that people component. So what does that structure look like to get us from A to B and make sure the most important part of bringing our mission to life is our people is prepared to do so.
How much of your work these days is process, and how much of it is technology?
You know, I would say probably 70-30, with being a little bit heavier on the process side, but a lot of it depends, I think, where we are in our journey and where we are and what we're trying to do. Technology to me is really, you know, kind of how I'm gonna get it done. Once I know my process, once I have the build, once I know what's going to work right for our organization and really answer our questions, that's when technology really comes into play. I made that mistake, I think, a few times early on where I got so wowed by technology and what was out there that I kind of jumped after that and found that, yeah, that's the coolest thing in the market, really good bells and whistles, but it didn't answer what we needed as an organization. So I kind of had to flip, you know, kind of flip how I looked at it, you know, to really get things that answered our questions that we had.
It's actually some of the things that John and I are seeing in the research is that, you know, you and no one wants to hear this, but you can put inferior technology in a superior process and get there. But you can't do the opposite. You can't put great technology on an inferior process, which no one wants to hear. Actually, no one really wants to hear that because process is tough, man. Process and outcomes. I always look at there are two different things there. It's the flow through, but then the what are you trying to achieve stuff. And to really look at that stuff, there's no fun in that. It's redoing the plumbing.
Exactly. And I think like that's, you know, there's that. I think when you start a project, when you start to really look at your processes, you know, it's that balance of thinking versus doing. You know, it's how much do we think about it? How much do we push? How many questions do we ask to really frame the problem? And, you know, how long do we keep that question and exploratory phase going, you know, before we start to push the boundaries of those what ifs to really try and make the rubber hit the road and say, okay, well, here's what we think so far, and here's where we're going to stop, you know, kind of moving on into the action stage and the build stage. And there's always that kind of, geez, did I ask enough questions? Did I ask the right, questions? Are we really going in the right direction? And, I think there's this, kind of a little bit of fear of, we live in this culture where, we're answer heavy, and so it's like, when do I have the right answer? And, did I ask the right questions? So I think there's always that fear when you start, really looking at a new process.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because there's vulnerability underneath there, that at some point you look at your process and people attach their personalities, they attach their political capital to it. It's, this is, I built this, this is my baby, this is the recruiting process, and really, and we all do that. I mean, that's not any failure of any one person. We all get attached to these things. And to then go, well, you know what? And actually, Billy Beane said this one time, that it was, if we weren't already doing this way, how would we do it? And it was really around this concept of innovation. How do you constantly innovate? How do you get to a point where you're, it's not personal, and it's not ego, and it's not attached to a person. It's, hey, listen, let's just let our minds wander for a moment. And, first of all, it might come out on the other side and say, yeah, no, it's actually pretty good, which is great. But why not look at a blank screen or a blank wipe-off board and go, okay, well, if we weren't doing this, what can we conceive an idea whether we would do it differently? And that's process, outcomes, and technology, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So let's do the top of mind stuff first before we get into some of the other things. What's if anything HR related is keeping you up? I'm just going to start there. If anything HR related is keeping you up or occupying a lot of your brain these days, what is it?
Yeah, actually, kind of it's funny because it's kind of what we just started to talk about a little bit. I think where we are in our journey. For anybody that kind of follows CPK is. We started 1985, two lawyers, introduced California pizza, California pizza or California style pizza to the world. And what that meant at the time was like barbecue chicken pizza. They had, really funky things like rabbit sausage on the pizza. And so we were like out there and we were different in the space, and as we evolved, over the years, I think we moved to a place where we tried to please everyone. And so what that meant is we became mediocre. There was really not a lot of difference between us and other brands and what you could find in our menu versus others. And we kind of lost, our identity. And so we went through, a few years ago when we went from being a public company to a private, we're acquired by GGC, and they brought on a new CEO, GJ Hart, and we went through this kind of a transformation of going back to the basics, like you were saying, like wiping the slate clean. Why are we in business? What are we about? What are we here to do? And so when we started to ask those questions, it went around our food, our hospitality, our look and feel, and, just our culture, what are we about? We're about our people. And, we want to have this culture of innovation. And so it was challenging. And so when you started to talk about, hey, people are sensitive over things they built, there was so much of that. I think because people put so much of themselves into what they build and do, that when you go to kind of wipe the slate clean and really look at rebuilding those things, it's challenging. And so you have to do that, approach that, a little differently and a little carefully. And really reminding people overall strategically what you're all in the game to do. And so what that meant for us a couple years ago is we went through a lot of brainstorms. And what it meant for the people team is we went through a lot of brainstorms. What are we doing? And how are we supporting our people? And are we structured right to get where we need to go? And those are some really hard questions that we, had to ask ourselves. And, out of that came a lot of great initiatives that we are kind of mid-process rolling out. And so I think when you're process rolling out and you're just in implementation mode, one thing after the other, just going out, you kind of go back and you I wake up in the night and I'm just like, did I ask the right questions? Am I asking the right questions now? Because we're so pressured to deliver results that you just want to make sure that those results you're delivering are the right results. Because there's nothing worse than rolling out a project and you hit all your deadlines, you hit all your budgets and your goals, but it didn't answer the original question. It didn't answer, or you didn't ask the right original question. And so I think for me, that's what keeps me up a little bit at night is, how am I doing? How am I evolving? Are we on the right path? Is the team focused? Are they motivated? Are we, are we still keeping that curious mind with what we're doing? Are we being agile? And I think agility is one of the things that, I'm most, most focused on and get concerned with.
Yeah, it's interesting because this is part of our values. It's part of our culture, and you are who you are. At the end of the day, you know, I think people that really kind of focus on culture, it's like it's really a rendering. Like if you think you can manipulate the culture, you're probably not thinking about it, you know, 100% correctly. At the end of the day, it's the culture is represented by the frontline staff, you know, by your receptionist, by the hostess, by the, I mean, people that they meet every day. It can't really be manufactured in some ways. And so I do have a question around destination and journey, because I've been thinking about this a lot lately. And as you talked, I was like, you know what, do you ever reach there? Because you use the words midway. And so it got my brain thinking about, well, A, how do you know? B, do you ever reach the goal? Do you ever get to the place, or is that just go live? Is that the final? Is that the thing? Like, do you ever reach that place?
No. And I, yeah, no. I think 'cause if we did, I mean, we'd be out of jobs, wouldn't we? But like, I think for me, I think it's one of the things is people, I was thinking about this yesterday, time to us, it can be segmented. Like we look at it segmented because we're sitting in the middle of it. As we look around, it's what's happening right now. We're in the middle of it and we can only see it as it is. But when you look back, it's an entire journey. Kind of your ups and downs, your things you hit, your things you didn't hit, your things you succeeded at, the things you failed at. And it becomes this kind of, cohesive, journey for us. And I think, when you, I was reading a book the other day. I think it was called The Beautiful Question. And they talked about, is there, is there an end? Is there a whatever? And to me, it's a continual journey. And so if you have, they talked about the mission statement. Should it be a mission statement or should it be a mission question? Because when you have that question, you're always showing that you're trying to achieve what it is the company. You're open to new ways of doing stuff. You're open to feedback and you're open to growing. And I think for me, there's this overarching of what we're trying to achieve and a lot of things that we're doing to keep that momentum going. And so when there's a project that happens and it finishes, it's kind of moving on to the next one and bleeding that project into the other. So it becomes this full life cycle of moving the company forward, of moving our people forward, because it's like this living, breathing journey. That to me doesn't really end because our focuses, our focuses change, our goals change, and we're always trying to move to meet those.
Yeah, and you want to, like you said, motivation earlier. It's like, how do you keep people running with that idea and not becoming complacent or comfortable or, you know, like, okay, yeah, we've achieved. I see this a lot in sports too, where teams win something. It doesn't matter, World Series or college football championship, whatever it is. And the next year, I mean, it's like the moment that they win, celebration, the next day, okay, what are we doing for next year? Like, how do we build the spirit? Because if you don't, every coach would tell you, it's how do you get people to not become comfortable with the success that they had yesterday? And that there is no answer. It's an unanswerable question because every person's going to be different, right? Motivating people, I think, first of all, whether or not it's done through incentives or goals or feedback, or like, again, I think everybody's a Rubik's Cube when it comes to these things, and it's moment by moment that one day it might be muddy. And the very next day, it might be, I want to know my career path. And I think people are that complex, and I think it's that treacherous that we've got to keep them motivated, but it's not a one and done, it's not cookie cutter. First of all, that's me in theory. Are you seeing anything similar to that in the real world?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the things that I've, learned, and I think one of the things that we kind of talk about here, at CPK is, finding out what motivates people, meaning what is their passion? What do they love? What do they love to do? And that's really what's going to motivate someone. You can offer someone a gift card to sell something or to do something else, but is that really going to change a behavior? No. And so I think it's really finding out what motivates people, what gets them up in the morning, what are they passionate about? Is it, do they love just, do they love to read? Do they love talking to people? Do they, what do they love? Do they love to write? Finding out what those things are that fuel them and figuring out how to tie that to what we do here, and giving people the opportunity to bring their passion to work. Because I think if you can find ways to marry the two, that's where you get your true motivation. And that's where you get people really wanting to come to work because they can see the link between what they do and the company, and that what they do matters here. And they're not just coming to be a job description. They're not just coming to fill, you know, kind of basic needs, and, you know, they're employee number one of 10,002, you know, but that they're, what they're doing here, you know, matters and makes a difference, and tying, you know, what they do to that. And I think that's our challenge as leaders, is, you know, taking, you know, and helping people see that what they do every day, you know, I, you know, whether I could be a server, you know, a busser, the CEO, you know, a director, or whatever I am, and showing how what they can do every day actually moves the company forward. I think that's an incredibly, you know, powerful motivator.
That's super useful. I remember that in my retail background, where this is Walmart days, but basically we knew as employees or associates, we knew the gross markup on items on the shelves. And, you know, and on one level, you're like, well, why does that, you know, they got another job. Why would you care? But you did care. And the more that they pushed that down, that knowledge down to the front lines, like, hey, listen, here's the markup and here's why that's important. I think that's genius. That is absolute genius. Let me ask a little bit about failure. So, you know, take us through, you know, something that you failed at. Let's just assume that you failed at something. And really, what did you learn from it is really what we care more about, is, okay, how'd you resolve it? How'd you get over the hump and find out what you learned about it? Because that's how we're going to learn. That's how everybody listening to the call is going to learn about how they deal with failures that come up in their lives and careers.
Yeah, well, okay, there's been more than one. There's been quite a few. both personally and professionally. But, you know, I think, you know, at that time, you know, in CPK, when we were rolling out, you know, kind of a lot of things, when we had that moment of, you know, the brainstorm, and here's what we need to do to evolve our brand to where we're trying to go. You know, we had, you know, a lot of different things that we were trying to roll out. You know, we had a new appreciation program that we were trying to get out, and we loved it. We loved what we built. We loved what we designed. We designed some really cool things around building this culture of appreciation, you know, but then when we came to roll it out, you know, it didn't really have the impact that we wanted it to. And it didn't really have that kind of, I mean, we just thought it was just going to just have this monumental kind of change impact. And one of the big things I learned was there's something called saturation levels, you know, and so we weren't the only ones rolling things out. There were other departments, you know, new food, new menu items, new hospitality, new, you know, new uniform, like all this stuff was rolling out. And there's so only so much that people can, you know, can retain and can roll out and can do it successfully. And so, you know, we had come at a time when the saturation level was already over the top. And so, you know, it was tough because it was something that we were passionate about, something that, you know, we were trying to really make a difference in the lives of our employees and make them feel that they are appreciated. Let me talk about kind of tying their passion to what they do, you know, and really knowing that they were part of something great here at CPK and we were great because of them. And so, you know, when we looked at that, you know, you have that moment, I think, when you first feel like something has failed or not gone well, when it feels like kind of the air sucked out of the room, your heart stops beating, and you're just a couple swear words just come out of your mouth, you know, you're just like, God dang it, you know, it shouldn't have been like that. And I think, you know, failure to me is not a bad word, because failure to me is a temporary state, you know, just like water can turn to ice, you know, it can turn to steam, it can turn to Kool-Aid, you know, it can turn to a lot of different things. And failure only stays failure if you throw your hands down and you walk away and you leave it as that. But if you take it at that moment and you shake it off and you look at it and you start to ask questions and you take that failure and you surround it with questions, and those questions start to kind of make that failure into clay, and they start, well, what did we do? And what if we had done this? And we start to learn from it, and we start to, you know, that failure becomes a launch pad, a pivot, a learning experience, you know, whatever it becomes, but you're changing it into something completely different. And at the end, it actually makes you more powerful, you know, because you have this learning experience now, and you can now look at it and gives you a new perspective. Now that we know that, you know, what we know, what can we do now? You know, and how can we evolve? And when I talked earlier about time kind of being in segments, when you're in that moment of failure, that's all you can see around you. But when people look back, or you look back on your life or your career, it's one little step in the journey, you know, that people are like, oh, wow, had that not happened, this wouldn't have happened. And so I think that was a big thing for me and my team, you know, when we talked about it, we talked about it at length, and, you know, we talk about failure, because failure isn't a bad word. failure is part of our journey, and failure is only a bad word if it stays a failure. You know, if we don't talk about it, if we don't address it, we don't ask questions, and we don't evolve it, you know, then it stays what it is. And so, you know, that's kind of how we learn to kind of recover or deal with it, is we talk about it, we question it, we evolve it, we wipe the slate, you know, we kind of relook at what it is, or what did we do and how can we continue to evolve it and keep it moving.
Well, you know, I love this phrase, failure is not a bad word. How do you get people to believe, because, you know, there's a taboo, just the word failure, like there's such a taboo. You say failure and half the audience are like, ooh. And I'm more in your camp than not, because I look at it as that's how you grow. You know, if you're not failing, you're not growing. You're not trying enough. If you're not failing.
Exactly.
So I don't have the same taboo, but I recognize that, you know, the world's not just you and I, that there are a lot of people that still look at failure and see it as a blemish, as a word that, and a concept that they don't want near them in whatever way of that. How do you get people to buy off or to see that vision? And secondly, do you see this as any way generational? Like, is there any, when you look at that, failure is not a bad word, can you split that up and say men, women, you know, anything? Is there anything that makes that where you can kind of say, okay, it settles out, this generation is a little bit more at peace with that, this generation isn't, anything there?
Yeah, I think, you know, well, first, you know, kind of how I frame it, like how, you know, I try to change the definition of that word is, it's all perspective. And so, you know, if you're not trying, like you said, there is no failure. And I know for myself, I'm more interested in the unknown than the known. And when you dare to kind of venture into the unknown, the chance of failure can be greater, because there's no common knowledge in the unknown. You know, there's nothing that's really, obviously it's unknown. No one's there gone before you to say, hey, turn right, turn left, don't do this, don't do that. And so you're an explorer, you know, just like the early explorers. And so to me, it becomes, you know, a sign of that bravery to explore, that sign of that bravery to go into the unknown and to challenge the status quo. And, you know, I even started saying, I don't want to challenge the status quo, I want to change it. And so, you know, and that's kind of our thought process here. And, you know, the people that I work with, is that we say that we want to go into the unknown and we want to create the future. We don't want people to tell us what it is. And so, and that's part and parcel. And so failure becomes a step in this greater call or this greater whatever to go into that unknown. And it's a sign of, you know, there's no rules before us. I mean, we're kind of testing those uncharted waters, and, you know, we're going to have to fail in order to figure out what's right, what works, what doesn't. And so, you know, that's part of it. And, you know, as far as it being, you know, is it men, is it women? You know, I do notice a slight difference, you know, if I'm talking to, you know, kind of people, you know, kind of more baby boomer generation or whatever, you know, there is, you know, if I'm even talking to my dad, there is this kind of sense of, you know, a failure of sticking to what's safe, of doing the process that, you know, wins. You know, but I think, you know, younger generations coming up in the wake of companies like, you know, Apple and all the different, you know, ones that are kind of pushing boundaries, it's kind of cool to be, you know, to stand out a little bit. It's cool to kind of, you know, have that innovative mindset. So it is changing a little bit. You know, and I think a lot of our problem with failure is really just perspective. It's because we're looking at it so segmented, and we're not looking, we don't have that larger picture in mind where failure falls under it, and failure is not the main thing.
Nice. The saturation point that you talked about, first of all, I love the concept that, you know, they're not just a saturation, like people are just full, but there's also a diminished return. You keep talking about it, I'm done, you know. How do you know what that is? Like, how do you have a finger on the pulse of what is and isn't the saturation point?
You know, I think a lot of it is, you know, when we create or we so innovate, we sometimes do it in bubbles, and we talk about, you know, what will work, of what will be great, and we forget to talk about to the people that are impacted by it. You know, people that are impacted by the things that we're trying to do or trying to roll out or trying to change. And I think, you know, just talking And it's so simple. It seems like it should be this great kind of algorithm or formula for it, but it's simple. I think it's just talking to people. It's talking to people. What's going on? What's going on in your day-to-day? What's going on in your life? What do you think about X? What do you think about Y? And really trying to understand the environment, environment / people in which you're trying to build, kind of these solutions. And it also, helps to, kind of shape you for more success because you're building in the real world and not in these kind of, little labs, that really don't have a gauge on the real world.
Nice. So I got a question from the Twitters around restaurant, hospitality, food service, and I know that the company focuses on a lot on experience. Like what the customer experiences from the moment that they park, come in, like everything's orchestrated on some level to get to, an experience that's really that people love, shocking, right? How does that translate over to the either candidate experience or the employee experience? Do we think like that for those people?
Yeah. I think one of the things that we did, and one of the big changes that we made when I kind of talked about this change that CPK went through kind of a few years ago, when we started this kind of transformational agenda that we're on now, is we had, a sequence of service, very specific things that we want our employees to execute on. It was like this list of trying to remember everything you said to the guest and in which order and how you said it. And it became very, kind of robotic. So, we just looked at that and we're like, that's not who we are. And that's not who we want to be. And that's not how we want our guests to feel as if they're being questioned by the FBI when they're just, coming in to eat. And a lot of that was letting the employee, letting our servers and, be who they are and be that individual. And, we as a company, kind of said, we're going to celebrate the individual and, we're going to celebrate that individual in our guests and in our employee. And so we wanted them to be who they are and we wanted them to go to the table and just engage them as a real person and have that authenticity come through. How are you? What are you celebrating today? How can I be a part of that? How can I make it be better? It was changing that, kind of going from a service model to a hospitality model. And so I think when it comes to who we look for now, in our employees, is we really look for somebody that has that hospitality kind of DNA of really just loving people, of loving to engage, especially at the restaurant level, of just loving to create that experience, for our guests who come there to celebrate. Sometimes they're coming just to grab a quick bite, but sometimes they're coming to celebrate, ending of treatments or a birthday or an anniversary. And, we want to bring that to life for them. And we want it to be, just a totally different experience. So it changed, a lot of who we looked for at CPK. And it rather became not necessarily about the specific skill set that you had to meet, but really about somebody who brought to life that, kind of hospitality DNA naturally.
So people are going to be curious about, because you play in the food service, restaurant, hospitality market, they don't know your world. Anybody listening to the call, I would assume, doesn't know your world. What's different about HR in that, those vertical markets or that in the market that you play in?
What's different? So I actually started HR in .com. So, I've worked in a couple different verticals. But I think what's different, in the restaurant industry is, what can be challenging, I think, especially from the HR world, is just that we're so, we're so far away. And so it's almost like you have, 100 little companies out there with the restaurants out there. And, I think some of the challenging things are really about, how do you keep that culture alive? And how do you really come alongside and support your operators and support your employees? When you have, like I've worked in the past, when you work in an organization where all your employees are under one roof or under one or two, a lot of those things you're trying to do, or that culture you're trying to enhance, or programs you're trying to roll out, become a little bit easier because those touch points are closer. And I think one of the challenges, whether it's restaurant or retail, is having your employees so spread out across the country and making sure that they're all getting, the attention and the programs and the support that they need.
Nice. Last question I've got, and then I'll see if you've got anything for me. The advice you'd give your younger self. So you're starting out before the .com stuff, and let's not go too far back, but In eighth grade, I would have never been friends with Sally. Now, advice that you'd give yourself when you're starting out your career in HR?
Wow. I really wish I would have learned some of the lessons that I've learned now and had the courage earlier on to really start pushing those boundaries and challenging those status quos, but I didn't really think that belonged in HR. HR historically was just kind of so formalized, and people call it the rule keepers or this and that, and it just seemed like the wrong place for someone, to kind of come in and do those things, but I was itching to do it, and I just didn't do it early enough. And so I think, I wonder sometimes, had I started earlier asking more questions and not being scared to ask those questions and kind of putting ego aside and really digging in, what that would have meant, whether for the company that I worked at the time or for me in my career, of really having that courage to ask questions and challenge, status quo and really push boundaries.
Nice. Well, we blew through 30 minutes. I mean, actually, we're running a little bit late. And I told you it was going to run fast. It actually,
Yes,
to me,
it
felt like 7 minutes. I would love to have you on again in the future because you're a really compelling person. Thank you for carving out time, because I know that it's a precious commodity and you don't have enough of it to get the things you want to get done. So I appreciate carving out some time for the audience and for myself. And just have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you. You too. Thank you.
All righty.